Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is brought to you by Academy for Educators, online professional development for teachers and leaders, online courses, modules, and micro-credential programs for teachers to enhance their skill sets. Now featuring the instructional coaching micro-credential, including 5 online modules framed around the work of Steve Barkley. Learn, grow, inspire. AcademyForEducators.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Taking the lead, new roles for teachers and school-based coaches. I had the great opportunity to be invited by Joelle and Killian and Cindy Harrison to write the foreword to the second edition of their book, Taking the Lead. And they've agreed to join us here today for the podcast. So welcome, ladies, and thanks for volunteering here.
Well, we're excited to be here, and we want to thank you for writing the foreword, because that was a gift to us.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. So would you just give for folks who are listening into the podcast who haven't had a chance to work with either of you, would you just give a short intro to a little bit about your background and the work you're currently doing? Joelle, you want to go ahead and jump in first, and then Cindy, as soon as she finishes, just follow.
Yes, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. And I want to add my thanks to you as well. Our deep coaching backgrounds and our commitment to coaches, I think, matters significantly. So my current job title is Senior Advisor to Learning Forward. In that capacity, I provide support to schools and school systems around coaching and professional learning, and literally am committed to building the capacity of teachers and leaders to do whatever it takes to promote student success. So that's my work right now, and I enjoy making it possible through opportunities to write, facilitate training, facilitate programs and planning, and evaluation of professional learning in multiple settings.
Thanks.
So, Steve, pretty much my background has been at the school level and at the district level. I was a middle school principal, middle school teacher, worked with instructional coaches in a district just north of Denver and created a coaching program. Currently, I work for myself. Sometimes I work for Learning Forward. But most of my work is around instructional coaching and coaching programs and professional learning communities. I'm doing a lot of work with school districts trying to meld those two initiatives to make them into one that makes the biggest difference at the classroom level, because that's really my commitment, is the school and the classroom level.
Could you describe what led to writing the first edition of Taking the Lead? What led to that being written and published?
So I think what really led to it was that Cindy and I had written an article back in 1998, I believe it was, Cindy, and our article was on the multiple roles of school district leaders who were responsible for professional learning. And what we described at that time were the 8 dimensions of the different aspects of their role, including planning and program evaluation, facilitating tasks, facilitating change processes. We had training built in there, and we did, you know, essentially decided or described the core competencies of people in the role of school district professional developers or staff developers. What we found in the transition into 2000, 2001 through 2004, people were beginning to talk about coaching, the implementation of coaching programs, and many people started to go back to that article and use it to try to describe what coaches do. And Cindy and I we received a number of inquiries and questions about what applied to coaches, and realized that people were trying to use the wrong set of roles to describe the work of coaches. And that's what led to us taking that original work and modifying it for someone who was specifically in the role of a coach.
I would also add to that that at some point in here early on, we wrote an article about teacher leaders and the roles they needed to take. And so that article was used by many at that point to just begin to describe it, but it was a very superficial take on those roles. And then as Joellen and I have worked through this, and I don't know if you know this, but we worked together in a district where we created a coaching program, and we had a lot of the roles. So we had the experience, the common experience, to try to build an understanding of what it looked like. And it took us a long time to figure out, like, what were really the roles and what were the roles that made a difference? Because there were lots of roles that people tried to take, but which were the ones that really made a difference? And so that was really kind of the first iteration of trying to figure all of this out. It was based on experience. It really wasn't based on a theoretical kind of framework from somewhere. It was based on what we saw worked.
I would like to read for the listeners the list of the 10 roles that are included in the book. And when I'm finished, I'm wondering if each of you would take any one of those roles where you think you'd describe the changes that have occurred from when you wrote about it in the first edition to the second edition. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it does, although I will say to you, there's not a great deal of change in the roles, but I think we could highlight some of them.
Okay. So here's the list of 10. Resource provider, data coach, instructional specialist, curriculum specialist, classroom supporter, learning facilitator, mentor, school leader, catalyst for change, and learner.
Okay, Joe, I want to go first here.
All right.
I'd like to take data coach, because I think when we started with data coach, we really looked at data coach much more as numbers, as creating graphs, as trying to figure out kind of what the numbers were telling us. And I think for me, the biggest shift when we moved to the second edition was the focus on student work, to really using the work to inform actions that needed to happen in classrooms. And I think in the first edition, we focused a lot, not a lot, but some, on actually looking at displaying the data, analyzing the data, and spending more time there. Whereas as we moved to the second edition, we really focused on using the student work to inform, to drive classroom practice. And I think that shift for me and in my work as well, I think has been very powerful, because now it's not about a number. It's about what do we know about the students that should drive our classroom decisions.
One I would talk about is the role of catalyst for change, and not necessarily in the sense that it has changed its emphasis or its core function. I think what a change that we are clear about in the second edition is that it is critical, and one that coaches are often reticent to step into, because the way Cindy and I describe catalysts for change is someone who intentionally perturbs this current state to create sufficient dissonance to promote questioning of the status quo. Many coaches are uncomfortable taking on that responsibility. They are often pretty happy consensus builders, and they want to keep things at a pretty even keel and everyone happy. And we are clearer with them in this second edition that they really cannot avoid this role and must develop the confidence to step into it.
And let me add, Joe, just there, I think what Joe is saying is really important, because if coaches aren't going to step up to that plate and begin to push the practice, ask the hard questions, really have people question their own practice, then we're really not going to make any changes. And I think we became clear on it, and we're probably much clearer with our clients now as we work with them. You don't have a choice but to take this on.
To be a change agent.
Yeah.
Cindy, when you did your intro piece, you mentioned professional learning communities. And I'm wondering how you see the list of roles tying into the role of professional learning communities within the school.
I see the coaches playing a variety of roles. I think when we first thought about it, they did a lot of facilitation of the work of professional learning communities. And I think we are moving much more now into coaches providing team coaching, where they're working with the whole team on instructional practices, on looking at student work, on deciding what they're going to do in their classrooms, holding each other accountable. And I think that because of that dovetail, both of them have become stronger. So in two districts that I can think about, clearly they would state that doing those two initiatives, rolling them out together, having them influence each other, has made everything more powerful than anything they've ever done in their districts, because a lot of times they didn't put stuff together. And by putting them together, I think they made them even more powerful.
The second edition of the book includes a chapter on team coaching. That's a change from the first edition. And it's a recognition, as Cindy is saying, that a coach very often stepped into the role of literally facilitating every PLC rather than coaching PLCs to become independent and to have the members within the PLC learn to facilitate and manage their own professional learning and implementation and analysis of that learning through an assessment of student work and designing the implementation of new instructional practices. So the coach's role is less about leading and facilitating directly. And we even talk about coaching directly the facilitators of professional learning communities. So kind of tearing up a little bit that leadership.
It's interesting. I'm working with a couple of schools, actually systems, where we're looking at trying to extricate the instructional coach from the professional learning communities, because if the professional learning community isn't producing, there's a tendency to hold the coach responsible for it. I was just on the phone this morning with an instructional coach, where I was sharing with her that I felt she could increase the accountability of the people in the PLC by her being there less. So her principal was kind of having her go to the PLC to increase the accountability. And actually, as I observed it, I saw it decreasing. Because if the principal's frustrated with what's not happening at the PLC, the members turn and hold the coach accountable instead of themselves accountable.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would agree with you 100%. And I think we've really pushed coaches. It's okay to facilitate in the beginning to help them kind of get their structures and everything together. But then you've got to get out of there, because they've got to run their own work and decide and hold one another accountable. for the work that goes on in classrooms and for student achievement. That's the more powerful model than a coach getting in there and facilitating. So we'd agree 100% with you, Steve, that we don't think that coaches need to be facilitating PLCs.
So when they are facilitating them, their role is really teaching the people how to do it. So that, so they should kind of go in with that mindset.
Right. And sometimes they're dysfunctional ones that we encourage coaches to go back into to help them just straighten everything up so that they can move forward.
But I'm,
because they can't move forward because they're such everything's such a mess that you have to help them get on the right track.
I mean, I'm meeting many coaches that this can be a major chunk of their time that they have available.
Right. You know, the other thing is that coaches can be useful to PLCs as the external experts that are called in.
Called in resource, yep.
Occasionally to do some mini lessons, to bring resources and expertise, to model a lesson or strategy. But to be the full-time facilitator, it does eliminate responsibility of members.
So would it be fair to say then the direction we'd be headed is really building the leadership capacity of more of the staff by the work that the coach is doing?
Yes. Coaching leadership.
I would say that by, you know, year two or three of PLCs at a building, a coach ought to just be providing resources and be there as a resource to the PLCs and no longer attending them all, facilitating them all, should not be a majority part of their job.
I recently did a podcast with Jim Knight. And one of the conversations we got into was looking at the role of instructional coaching versus the role of peer coaching. And I'm wondering if you would comment on where you see that fitting into the work that you're doing.
We talk about coaching as a practice of support. So peer coaching is someone who may or may not have training in how to coach. We hope they do have some training in coaching. Instructional coaching is a specific form of coaching that focuses on the act of teaching and learning. It often is designed to support the implementation of effective instructional practices, particularly instructional practices that are appropriately aligned with curricular outcomes for students. If somebody said, how is peer coaching and instructional coaching different? I would say the only visible difference on the surface might be the topic that coaching, the topic of coaching. Peer coaching could be about anything. Instructional coaching is clearly about instruction, teaching, and learning. I'm assuming peer coaching is about instruction, teaching, and learning, but it doesn't necessarily need or convey that. So I envision a world in which the aspirations of every educational professional are to reach a point in his or her career where coaching is a part of one's practice, that as one develops expertise over time, one begins to give back to and develop the capacity of those who are entering and developing expertise. And that coaching is a part of everyone's job. It's not just assigned to a person who happens to have the title coach. That's not how it's practiced right now. And I think we're working toward that in schools.
I also think that Joe and I believe that everyone should be participating in coaching. We don't really believe that coaching is voluntary, that as a principal, I would say to my staff, my expectation is that you grow and that you grow all the time and that you use resources that are available to you. So the coach is one of your resources. And my expectation for you as a member of the staff is that you use that coach. So I think that's a little different than some other people who believe that it's totally voluntary. I believe it's part of your responsibility as a professional is to grow and get better. And using a coach is one way to do that.
I'm smiling because I met with a high school principal who was at the beginning of the third year of having instructional coaches in the building. And I asked him if there were any department chairs who had yet to invite the instructional coach in, and when he shared most of them. And my immediate response was, I'm having trouble understanding how they could still be holding
Their
title of department chair. I mean, if they weren't the first people stepping forth to model that, you were missing the whole mark of having a leadership role within a school.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But I'm not sure all principals have made that clear to their staff, because they've been so careful about not mounting to mandate coaching. And I get that, but that it's like they've gone the other direction and not made it an expectation that you grow and that you get better all the time. And part of that goes with the coaching piece. And I don't think we've been strong enough in that.
Well, I use the example that if I'm an administrator and a teacher comes into me with a concern, or as I'm looking at the teacher's data, a problem pops up, you know, that my first question to the teacher would be, you know, well, what did you find when you worked with the instructional coach? Mm-hmm. And for the teacher to look at me and said she hasn't, you know, this shocked look on my face, it was kind of like, we have a library in the school, but you don't use it. You know, we have computers, but you don't use it. It's the instructional coach is a resource that we've invested in. And I'd be hard to understand how, as an educator in the building, you aren't tapping into that resource.
You know, Steve, one of the reasons why Cindy and I delineate the roles and the distinctly, while they do overlap and we acknowledge that, there are some distinctions among the roles and different responsibilities. And under no circumstance is it even possible for a teacher to say, a coach can't help me, when there's an array of 10 different types of supports that a coach can provide to a teacher. Somewhere in that array of 10 is an entree for every coach and an opportunity for the learning of every teacher. And we really stress that when people say, well, people won't work with the coach, they don't want to, they're this, they're that. We say, why, you have 10 roles. You've got 10 roles to make that happen.
So the 10 roles,
they can be tiered.
The 10 roles are almost a menu for the teacher.
Yes. Although we do say, and Cindy and I are very clear, that we don't think any one coach should do all 10 simultaneously. You know, early in a year, a coach is a resource provider. Maybe the first couple weeks of school, make sure everybody's got what he or she needs. Then we want to narrow those roles so there can be power, impact, efficiency, and effectiveness.
I think we have learned that if the coach is not the right person, they want to hang out in resource provider, because that's a very easy role. I can just keep giving you things, and I don't really have to be competent at my job or really have to know instructional practice or whatever. That I think we found that out. And one of the things we've said to coaches is you have to be in classrooms. Just facilitating team meetings or just, you know, working with people outside the classroom is not good enough. You must be in the classroom with teachers to make the impact you need to make on student learning. Mm-hmm. So that's been, I think, a shift for us as well.
And as we work with district leaders who develop coaching programs or implement coaching programs, we help them get clear on what goals they're trying to achieve through the implementation of a coaching program, and then align the roles and responsibilities that they will hold coaches accountable for to the goals that they're trying to achieve. And sometimes districts miss that step. They have coaches doing all things for all people, which ends up with that coaching light stuff. They're crossing and bumping across the surface without any depth or impact. And we know that there are certain tasks a coach does that makes a bigger difference.
You want to label a couple of those?
Cindy, I'm going to let you go for it because you're really good at nailing these.
I tell you, number one, it's got to be instructional supporter, which is in the classroom on a regular basis, co-teaching with teachers, modeling with them, observing, giving feedback, that's one of the most powerful. I also believe that the role of data coach, when you're looking at student work together and you're looking at analyzing it to figure out what's next step with these students instructionally, is also a very powerful role. So those would be two I would pick. What would you pick, Joe?
Well, and I would pair those, Cindy, with, I wouldn't supplant, but I would pair those two with instructional specialist and curriculum specialist. The core, those core, four core roles, data coach, classroom supporter, instructional specialist, and curriculum specialist, are the essence of teaching and learning. And when we do have coaches in roles of facilitating school-wide or team-based professional learning, then we add in the role learning facilitator. When coaches end up with responsibilities like facilitating the school improvement plan or the parent liaison committee, they may have a portion of their role as a school leader, for example. We strongly advocate that districts get very clear about what they expect coaches to do and even assign percentage of time to these responsibilities so that coaches know how to make decisions about their work every single day. When to say yes and when to say no.
You just hit it. I was going to say, very often in my work, I'm suggesting that if you're at all effective as a coach, you have to say no a lot. And sometimes that no is to your building administrator. And so what allows you to say no is that the coach principal partnership has outlined what those key elements are now, and that's where our major focus is. And if I talk about every 3 months kind of meeting to see, should we be, number one, are we implementing the plan? So if you look back at your time, have you been doing what we said you were going to do? Mm-hmm. If not, why is that? Or has something caused us to change and we see that focus in a different area? But trying to be all things to all people is not going to get you there.
Doesn't work. And when we work with districts, and I think if I could tell you, I think the most powerful coaching programs are set up very clearly from the district level in terms of outlining what the major roles are of the coaches. And then there's the partnership agreement with the principal. And then there's the implementation and keep coming back to it. Are you doing what you said you do? But it's clear from the very start. When it is not clear from the start, it's very messy and very ineffective. And we say that again and again and again to districts who ask us to work with them. First thing I say is, can you just share with me your job description? And most of the time, the job descriptions are like, could be like anybody could be doing this job. It makes no sense. So if somebody can help them from the very start, get clear, succinct, focused, you can make a huge difference. And I'm watching districts now who basically the coaches have taken over the program. They've done a great job. They become the teachers of each other. They are very powerful as a team of people, but it's because they were focused from the very start.
Right.
And when they aren't focused, they're wasting a lot of time.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the one piece I would also add to what Cindy's mentioned is that it is really essential to have an ongoing assessment and evaluation of the coaching program, as well as of coaches in their coaching role, not just using teacher performance expectation. And I think that's a piece that districts are missing very often. They don't have a formal way of monitoring and evaluating the effectiveness of coaching and coaches.
Last question I had here for you is, I'm wondering what thoughts you would share regarding school administrators seeing their role in developing the capacity of teacher leaders.
I would have to say that when that relationship is off, like when the coach and the principal don't see eye to eye, or the principal has really different expectations for the coaches, the program does not work. It just goes awry, because now the coach ends up doing a lot of administrative duties. And I think that is a big, something you have to avoid, I guess, in the overall program. I would say one of the things I think we've learned a lot about is that if there is somebody at the central office who's like the coaching champion, who understands coaching deeply enough, can look at the big picture, can buildings when they run into problems with coach-principal relationships. If there's that kind of structure, you can push it forward and get through anything. When there's not that kind of help to get through it, then people, you know, have an issue along the way.
I think the piece for me, Steve, is that when principals see that a primary responsibility of their leadership role is to cultivate leadership in others and cultivate leadership by intentionally developing the capacity of others and coaching leadership in others, then I think we're able to see what Cindy's talking about, that sort of building toward the goal of teacher leadership. When principals think that building capacity is giving grunt work to teacher leaders, and you know, I'm sorry to use that term, but using the work responsibilities that they don't want to do or they find unattractive to do and just turn it over to someone else to do, a teacher often, without developing an understanding of how those roles and those tasks contribute to the overall the operation and the function of a school, their purpose, and understanding how to do it and how to assess its effectiveness. So the need to develop capacity is critical. The attention to it is often minimal.
Let me also just add that I also say to coaches, you better not be the only teacher leader at your site. Your job is to create other teacher leaders. And we've seen some coaches who like want to be the only teacher leader. No, your job is to make more teacher leaders. And I think sometimes that's a hard understanding for them.
Well, ladies, thank you so, so much. I really appreciate your time. To all the listeners, I stick taking the lead on your read list, both coaches being able to support their own work, building administrators, and certainly the district level staff that are charged with making a coaching program work and being able to show the payoff from it.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Have a great day.
See you too.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.